charge we're not sure about.
Okay, sliding into episode 7 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. It's just you and I, Hans, with a couple of special guests.
Yeah, and what guests? I mean, three Brits and a Belgian walk into a German bar. It's this one this week, right?
It's like a joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Speaking of jokes, last night at the bar, Wigs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, Federico Monson, our good friend from A3 Communications, our PR friend, she brought, instead of beer goggles, she brought wigs. Two blondes, a blue and a red one.
Yeah.
Everyone wore them. The pictures are online. And
and Enrico was, he really goes for the redheads, I think, based on that.
And the blondes as well. Enrico took his first selfie last night with the wig on.
Yeah, he took his first selfie and then proceeded to take 50 more selfies. And I think he's addicted now. So we should probably introduce our guests. You guys are a bit of a double act, aren't you? Chris Evans and Martin Glassborough.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're at Powering the Cloud in Frankfurt at the moment. And I've seen you guys even doubling up on some of the press sessions, actually.
Yep. We like doing that. That's quite a cool way of doing it. Because when we're asked the questions, everyone takes the notes.
Do you know what? Some people don't like it. Some people don't want to do it. It scares them a bit more, and it's good fun.
Yeah, who decides who does the talking and who takes the notes then?
Well, yesterday Martin had more of an interest in a particular subject, so he was more skilled on the details, so he did the talking out.
What was that subject, Martin?
Well, I was talking to DDN, so obviously I know quite a lot about DDN and hyperscale storage environments. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I could drill DDN about what they were doing, where they're moving. There's a bit of discussion about GPMS.
For the listeners that don't know DDN, give it in two or three lines what they do.
DDN comes from High Performance Computing Environment. It's massively scalable storage, very good sequential I.O. It's all about the throughput with them, and you tend to find it behind things like GPFS, Lustre, and they're moving into object storage. There was a product for a long time. They've just put an S3 gateway in front of it as well. So
weren't they object-based for a while already, or not?
They have been object-based for a while, but the problem is most of the object storage companies, if you don't talk S3, people aren't very interested in doing anything.
What about CDMI?
Well,
I'm just kidding. Sorry. It's kind of based around S3 anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, CDMI, the interesting thing with CDMI was talked SNIR, as you did, Nigel, yesterday, and they were talking about the CDMI standard, and there's an ISO standard now.
Yeah,
but the way they seem to have got around the S3 compatibility thing is they've just balled the S3 layer into them. CDMI is got a part which is S3. I'm not quite sure where the value prop around CDMI is. You said actually we'll just turn S3 into an ISO standard and off we go.
Yeah. Hey, are they cheap and deep storage? Because I know they do these trays that have got an insane number of hard drives in them. Weigh an insane number of kilograms, but a 4U high.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't want a rack of them upstairs in your bedroom. Are they a cheap deep offering?
you keep lots of tech in your bedroom.
Well, why not?
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
They're certainly a deep offering, whether they're cheap or not. I'll leave that to our account manager to discuss.
Okay.
But people like DDN do have a problem. I mean, it's a commodity comes, and that's where cheap and deep plays. So I think they're trying to work out how they get this value prop around being a storage company. Mm-hmm. They have things like Ceph, Scale.io, vSAN. vSAN not so much, because it's virtualized, and HPC customers generally aren't playing in virtualized space.
Yeah.
But certainly some of the software-defined storage or storage and software could really impact them. I mean, so if you look at GPFS was their new G7K product from DDN, which is a GPFS storage service, a couple of storage heads in front of their array. I could pretty much do a lot of that without buying their special array. But they have some interesting tiering technology, so they can do caching at a particular level, so you can start speeding up. So they counter some of the problems you have with some of the cluster file systems, which are small files. So if you can actually put it into a much faster tier, say SSD or even in RAM, you can actually handle small files as well.
So to a certain degree, you're saying they're quite software-defined storage type play, because a lot of their value add is in the software.
To GPFS as such has been around for quite a while now.
A long time.
Yeah. How much is it on par with new distributed file systems?
I would say GPFS is probably the best of all the distributed file systems by a long way.
Wow.
Because IBM have been doing this for 15 years.
Certainly in production readiness as well.
And they're now beginning to... biggest problem with GPFS is actually it's a product written by engineers for engineers. So it's
hard to configure.
Hard to configure, hard to manage. IBM are beginning to realize that. So they're beginning to put the tools to allow you to get the information and manage it quickly and easily. When I started with GPFS, I did very early installs of GPFS. At one point, I worked for a reseller, and we were selling to oil and gas. GPFS was massive in oil and gas. GPFS was a pig to configure. Now, you can have GPFS cluster up and running in 10 minutes, if you know what you're doing. But it's...
Can you screw it up?
Yeah, you can screw it up.
How much?
I think you...
What would be a classic screw-up?
You could totally butcher it.
In those 10 minutes?
In those 10 minutes, you just misconfigure your network and it would run like a pig. That's what it... The problem is actually you need this, as we've talked quite a lot about networking, so the east-west traffic. East-west traffic is very, very important to GPFS because all the nodes need to be able to talk to each other. You need low latency switching generally. You can get away with it. InfiniBand, great for it. 10 gig E is great for it. If you look at it, where it comes from, it came from the IBM SP2, which was the MPP system we used to have. And they had a high-performance switch. They had their own switch. And that was brilliant for it because it was very low latency.
So DBN said the same thing, though, didn't they? Yeah. They said that they've spent a lot of time trying to, I can't think of if there's a word for it, but so package their stuff to be more like an appliance so that it can be more easily deployed by people rather than it being some sort of science project that you have to spend a lot of time working out how to deploy and configure. So I think that was one of their big issues.
And is that part of a strategic move to decouple themselves from that HPC type market and come more into enterprises and what have you?
I think they said that they were intending to carry on supporting that market.
Yeah.
So there's no change there. But they realized that to expand into a more enterprise market, they had to create something that was more appliance-based, easier to install, easier to manage. And that's been more of their focus. You know, keep that one side of the business where, you know, you're delivering something that has massively high performance and those customers might tolerate a few buggy bits of software, but the enterprise stuff needs to be more focused, more easily deployable, all the rest of it. So that's the way they're sort of splitting things.
And what's the main reason for that then? Is the enterprise different? Mm. Of course the enterprise is different as in maybe it demands higher uptime and things, but do we have less staff to throw at things? Do we have less skilled staff?
I think, I don't know what you think, Martin, but I got the impression that they were more concerned about reliability. So, you know, there might be some guys who are sitting in the university who are running some sort of, you know, process on their hardware. And if it failed or they had a bit of a data loss, they didn't care because they had it elsewhere. Whereas enterprise customers would be like, oh my God, where's my data gone? You know, that's not going to be good enough. It's a very different approach to, you know, to managing and keeping the data in one place and actually not losing it.
Yeah, it's interesting the way the HPC technologies are beginning to filter out into the wider world, though. I've talked to quite a lot of people who work in finance. They're beginning to look at GPFS and this high-performance environment because they're beginning to realize, hey, it has an interesting play in cloud because the HPC guys have been doing scale out for a long time. But also, as you're doing more and more data collection with the HPC guys, meaning all seismic, genome, that's all about collecting large quantities of data very quickly. But we're getting things like Internet of Things. We've also got a web scale where you're collecting lots and lots
web
of data.
Web scale, drink.
Buzzword bingo.
Hey now.
Going back to what we said earlier about GPFS and you suggesting that it's probably the best clustered file system right now, do you see that's going to be the case going forward or do you think things like Ceph will eventually overtake it? And if you do, how long before they do?
Ceph's probably got another 5 years before it can overtake it. I think there's also interesting plays for companies like EMC. I've suggested on my blog before, and you almost need to disaggregate WebFS from the hardware.
That's Isilon.
That's Isilon. And if they could ship WebFS as a clustered file system, that would be a very really interesting play for a lot of people. You could drop it in, so you dropped it into VMware or you dropped it into OpenStack and it just gave a WebFS layer which spanned all the nodes. You would have a very interesting scale-out software-defined storage solution.
And if EMC are serious about software-defined and software being the future, you've got to imagine they've got Skunkworks projects going on internally testing stuff like that.
I'm sure they've got every product that they sell as a hardware product running as a virtual machine somewhere. I'm sure they've got every single one.
VMAX VSA.
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Well, VMAX VSA exists. It has some stupid hardware requirements. But if you think about Scale.io, so Scale.io allows them to aggregate a load of disk across many machines, but probably it's back just gives you LUTs. But if you were to imagine a future where you were to then start laying something like WinFS on top of that, which gave you that common layer of file system for data, they had quite a powerful offering there. EMC being EMC, or probably borg it or cock it up. Or
really, I think I would disagree with that. I think EMC, if any of the major companies are going to make a success of softwareizing their existing products in the long run, I would bet on EMC against HP, IBM, Dell, anybody like that. And I think it sounds very much like EMC have got a lot of cards in their deck or in their hand.
Yeah, so they've got a lot of cards in their deck. Do they have too many cards?
Can you ever have too many cards? Yeah, I think
You can when you get to the point where you can't remember what you bought.
Yeah.
And you've got stuff all over the place and you think, God, what did I buy that for? And then where does that fit into the strategy?
Mm-hmm. A lot of their cards, though, like things like VMAX and VNX and what have you, don't have the brightest future in comparison to some of the, you know, OneFS, Isilon, Scale.io, stuff like that. So maybe those cards will start to be shuffled off to one side, the bottom of the pack.
I mean, I do wonder, VMAX and VNX. That's very interesting. If you start looking at how VMAX 3 and how they're changing the way that's managed and the architecture there, do they replace VNX with VMAX? I mean, so you've got file services going into the VMAX, so you can NFS and SIFS share out of the VMAX itself.
I think you're right. I think we're getting to a point where one platform is all they need at the high end. You know, whether we call it VMAX or VNX, it doesn't really matter. They're becoming so similar in lots of ways that ultimately they'll merge to be just one platform.
But when I started blogging, I really felt that it was going to be Clarion which won this war, because VMAX was, or DMX at the time, since SIM had been around for such a long time, it was aging, it was creaking. Now I'm not so sure. I think VMAX could be the could be the winner. The problem for EMC with VMAX though is it's got such a high cost premium, they have to accept the fact that they're going to have to start slashing margins on it.
And how does that translate down into like your lower end requirements as well? What is it? Because there's so much R&D in that, there's so much hardware requirement at the moment.
HP did it. They brought the 3-PAR from tier 1 down to SMB. I mean, the smallest box in a 3-PAR today is really small. It is the smallest EVA they had. And they even announced this week in the earnings call from Meg Whitman, she literally said, we're bringing the 3-PAR even lower to the point of MSAP 2000.
The writing is on the wall for Dot Hill then.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a worry for them, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because, you know, their boxes work and they're great. I've got one.
You've spoken to Dot Hill yesterday, did you?
Martin and I did, yeah.
How was that call?
Did you mention this about 3-PAR?
No, we didn't.
We didn't know because I think we were on such a negative dive anyway.
Okay.
I think they realised, you know, they're in a tricky position because they've got the cheap guys at the bottom end from Taiwan, like Qsan and Infotrend, that are trying to sell stuff at the bottom end, which works. And they're being pushed from that level, and then they're being pushed down from, you know, the likes of EMC, who are doing things like VNX, VNXE, and pushing downwards. They're in that middle ground with not really a lot of marketing money, and not a lot of opportunity to really say why they're different. So I think they're in a tricky situation.
If Dot Hill would lose the OEM contracts for the MSAP 2000 series, well, no, would they stand a chance against the Nimbles and so of today with the products they have?
I think all of these mid-tier vendors have a problem. You have to become very big very quickly. And Dot Hill have been around 30 years.
Yeah.
30
but
years
very
now.
Stable products.
Very stable products. But stable products eventually can just atrophy and just...
So that's the question, right?
It used to be a very stable market, didn't it? Yeah. It was the norm for year after year, but that's not the case anymore. The market is radically different now. It's changing at a rapid clip. And if those guys don't change, they're in for trouble. And to be honest, looking at them, they're as steady as you go.
What's the change that they need?
I don't know that there is a change.
No, I mean...
It's a tricky question to answer.
If they lose that HP market, and it's very... For them at their size with their product, it's hard to compete with a Nimble and a Tintri and Tegile and all those others in that mid-market. What do they need to do to be accurate in that market today?
I don't know. And it may be something really superficial, like a rebrand. A rebrand and a relaunch. Because the thing is, they need something to talk about. being steady as you go means nobody's going to talk about you. Yeah, you're interesting, but you're not that interesting. So we were talking about this, and people like Pure, Nimble, Tegile, they make big splashes in the market. So people talk about them. Nobody talks about Dot Hill.
No.
But is it only a company organization thing, or is it, can they compete on technology? That's two different questions. Is the product able to compete with?
Yes, I think it probably is. I think they have good technology, that's just not enough.
No, I get that, but that's the minimum you need.
Yeah.
All the rest is change in organization. If your product is decent, the rest is change in organization and execution on it.
Yeah.
From a technology perspective, though, do you really think that they can compete? You know, can they compete against something that's all flash, something that's tiered?
Does it have to?
I think it does, yeah. Something that's got a software-defined option. I know we hate the fact that these are buzzwords and not necessarily real markets at the moment, but all of the up-and-coming companies, if you don't have that in your portfolio, you know, investors are not going to look at you. And potential customers are going to look and say, well, okay, you'll do something for me today, but in 5 years' time, when nobody's using disk, and I'm not saying that will be the case, right, but you've got to consider that as a potential customer. What will they offer me in 5 years' time compared to a Tegile, a Pure, whoever?
So they've got a tiering feature in their array, which they call real-time, but isn't it? It's about every 5 seconds, I think, they evaluate and they move stuff around on that basis. And obviously, you don't want to be moving stuff around all the time because there's an overhead to that movement, so that's why it's probably not classed as really, really real-time. But, you know, so they've got that, and it's not dependent on it being flash or disk. It happens to be a bit of a tiering technology that could be applicable to anything, potentially, because all it's measuring is response time.
So even tiering between different levels of flash.
It could do. So you know, we can look at it. They've got technology features like that could be really good going forward and applicable as we evolve in the next 5 years, whatever. The problem is, they just don't know how to talk about it. And they haven't got the budget to sit there and be the guys who are in your face at every single...
And we've bemoaned this so many times, haven't we, that you can be a good technology company with good technologists, but if you can't get your message out there, then you become irrelevant. It's so sad that in so many cases, marketing is more important than engineering.
Yeah, give me
two historical examples of companies that had great products and just did not execute.
OS2 compared to Windows. Much better product. Windows was... So OS2 was... what's the multitasking technology they call it? Preemptive multitasking, wasn't it? And Windows wasn't. Windows was cooperative multitasking. So the process has to give up control. And that's why Windows 95 used to lock up, because the process would die and it wouldn't give up control, so that your whole system would die. Whereas with OS2, you had preemptive multitasking, where the system would interrupt that task even if it died, and it didn't affect the overall running of it. But what happened? Microsoft marketed better than IBM did. And as a result, what do we see? The worst product won.
Great example. Great example. Storage. One example in storage. Great product, didn't make it because of execution.
So while people think about that, I know we did used to complain a lot that HDS in the day had good technology but didn't get the message out, and it maybe didn't have the market share that it, from a technical perspective, I'm not going to say it deserved, but it was at least on a par with DMX and Symmetrix for a long time, but it had nowhere near the market share. Of course, those guys are still around as a company. They're still doing products. I'm not saying they really failed, but they could have done a lot better.
No, it's because HDS is the classic example, certainly within the UK.
Yeah.
They've never really managed to actually break out of their core environment, which is for finance houses.
Yeah.
But if you talk to anybody who looks at the arrays, they'll say, well, HDS is the better technology.
Yeah.
So why are you buying EMC? Why are you buying IBM? Because they come and talk to us, very easy to deal with.
It's company jets.
Yeah.
Let me put it. I have a following up question. A shitty product that did make it in the market because of execution.
Windows. But it's a good product now. It's a good product now.
And it took a long time to get it.
Really?
Yes, it is.
You think so?
No, it's rock solid.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Which one?
server
the 8.1 or the 10? No, server 2012 R2.
So every time you shut your machine down and it goes, oh, installing update 1 of 38.
Yeah, I know.
You think that's a great product? You think, I can't shut my machine down now because I've got to wait for a bloody
If I've got the desktop in the lab at home and I'm away like I am now for a few days and it says your machine's going to reboot in one day and I'm not there to see it, thanks very much for that.
Absolutely.
No, but I think as a core operating system, I've never seen it blue screen for a very long time. And then services that it has, like Active Directory and things, they're solid. And it's deployed widely in just about every enterprise now.
Have you ever tried to, or have you ever got into the real depths of something like Active Directory, or LDAP, or DNS,
and realized
that Microsoft do not support, do
proper
not
standards.
Do it properly?
No, I know, I get that, but they bring to market good products. They tweak the standards that almost, look, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of standards.
I could argue for Active Directory. I could argue for Active Directory. I mean, how many Active Directory migrations have you seen fail miserably?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, gee.
Oh, well, so here's another one to add to that. How many people do you know who've managed to integrate Linux/Unix with Active Directory?
Okay. Fair
can
enough.
Be done.
SMB4.
Hard work.
SAMB4, sorry.
It's hard work to get it to work.
But I don't know why you would want to do that anyway. You're asking for trouble if you do something like that. I appreciate the effort from the Samba guys with Samba 4.
You might want a single point of control that says, this is my database,
so you
this
just
is my
go
directory.
Active Directory.
So, but if you do that, you've got to link everything else with Active Directory, whether it's on Windows or Linux, and so therefore you have to make them work.
So I worked for a big bank in the UK a while ago that kind of no longer exists anymore. They got bought by somebody else during the crisis, and they had done a study that said if Active Directory went down, then people wouldn't be able to pull cash out of cash machines because of how reliant on everything else everything was. So they hired me to come in and say, how can we do a fast forest recovery of Active Directory if it ever goes tits up? And looking at their study that said, you won't be able to pull cash out of a cash machine if we lose Active Directory, even though it's all running on iSeries and mainframe, really. Yeah. It was like, but it plugs into AD at the back end.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn scary. Well,
but it's funny, that whole infrastructure thing, where we've got small pieces of infrastructure running on a low-end systems, which businesses are completely reliant on, this AD. The number of people who actually talk to me, their business will come to a grinding halt, certainly internally, if their DNS goes down.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, core infrastructure.
Yep.
How long before you can't pull cash out of a cash machine because an app on some guy's phone in the development team crashed, or he's left the organization and
put
code on it.
Or when Azure globally goes down because you did not renew the certificates.
Oh, that never happens.
Those are single points of misery.
Or you get Azure or AWS and some developer somewhere has not paid his bill, so they turn off all your systems. That could be an interesting.
Yep.
Hey, so I saw something in the news just, I think, yesterday, something that the Register put out about Pure potentially looking to expand out of just being a laser-focused storage startup, disrupting against the likes of VNX and who have you, looking to potentially move into either converged or hyper-converged. Any thoughts around that?
Well, if you look at Pure's business, they were very, very focused on replacing traditional 15K spinning disk arrays from EMC, that's where they targeted, with their flash stuff. So they weren't necessarily targeting themselves at being the fastest flash array, but they were targeting replacing that tier one workload.
Yeah, which is the biggest slice of the market. It's a much bigger slice of the market than, let's say, what maybe Violin were going
for. Yeah, so, but now we're in a different world where there's a lot more competition. People are looking at it and saying, why do I need to have a dedicated array? Could I not do converged? So VCE have just brought out their VBlock 540, which has got an Extreme IO array in. So that's now in the converged system. You've got hyperconverged, so Nutanix brought out the 9000 series, which has got all flash in their box. So where do you go if you're just a storage company?
As well, I think when Pure started out, a lot of the major vendors in their accounts, there was a hole there, wasn't there, in the portfolio of the EMC and Dell and everybody. They didn't have an all-flash offering, a shared all-flash offering if you wanted one. But most of those guys have plugged those holes now. Where do they then go to start winning business? Because now that your established EMC account has got an all-flash array and a pretty decent one by all accounts, then it's very, very hard to get a tower.
I think one of the drivers in this particular story, why does Pure have to expand their product portfolio? Well, because they're overvalued and they have, there's so much investment money in that company that they have to do more than just all-flash arrays. So they have to expand the company.
So think of Netter, the classic one-product company. You know, they sell one box. I mean, okay, they sell some other things.
Now they do, but they haven't for 25 years. Yeah. It's only in the last couple of years.
So they've been a one-box company.
Yes.
And where do they go next? How do they change themselves to be something different? And I think they've got a real problem. And I think Pure are probably in a similar position. They realize that, you know, one box isn't going to make a company. So they have to do other things. They have to
Well, the advantage NetApp had been able to do that for 15, 20 years is that they were the only real decent filer. There was no competition for NetApp. Yes. Everyone else was doing Bok. They were the only ones doing filer in that mid-market and up segment. Pure has a lot more competition in that performance-enhanced storage.
Yep.
Pure are now moving into a market which is very, very busy, hyper-converged. Even,
oh yeah,
if you were to, well, the announcement of VCE coming into EMC, so how long is it before we see a non-UCSV block?
Yeah, not very long.
I don't mean very long. Months. If you look at their Elastic Cloud Storage, which is based around commodity x86, are we going to see that as a component within a V-block? I suspect we probably will.
Yep.
They've already said they'll do something with Evo Rail, so they're going to have their own Evo Rail offering.
They're going to have an offering that is not Evo Rail as well.
Yeah,
so we'll have both.
So back to where we started our conversation, when we said about EMC having virtual versions of all of their hardware products. So how difficult will it be, not very, for them to put any of those virtual versions of their software products today into a VBlock? So, you know, you want to ship it with an Isilon, that's just a software version of Isilon with some hardware. They can basically build a personality into any of those bits of hardware to meet your requirements. So all of a sudden, they've got a very different business to the one they had, you know, 12 months ago.
So even in just the converged space then, rather than the hyper-converged space, VCE and EMC have got all of the cards, right? They've also got a dedicated sales organization,
yep,
dedicated management structure that they broke out from core EMC to drive this market. Pure have got an all-flash storage array.
A dual-controller array.
Right. Yeah. Full stop.
Yeah.
Because we were saying earlier, weren't we, it's absolutely one thing to try and disrupt against an aging market where people are getting sick of the technology and it's time to move on. But then you step up against Simplicity and Nutanix, people that, well, that's even in hyperconverged, but you step up against VCE, they've got all the cards, they've got the sales, that's a whole different ballpark.
And they've definitely got all the cards, now they're being drawn into EMC. Yeah. When they weren't part of EMC, it was a bit more difficult to see how they'd actually do some of those things. But now, as they get dragged back into EMC, they can do what they like now, because they've got everything, they've got all, as you said, all the cards, all the different pieces to build both converged and hyper-converged solutions, because they own all of those pieces of the industry.
Well, Campure, we know the word converged. We don't know if it's converged infrastructure or hyper-converged. And I'm not sure we can put Pure in a hyper-converged solution because it's not distributed.
So the interesting thing will be, what are they going to sell that makes it disruptive to everybody else?
What is going to be the difference as having a Pure array and some UCS servers, which is converged infrastructure, which is the same as Nimble has now as a stack, and everyone else
or
has as a stack.
That's
no longer being disruptive.
No,
that's just shipping your array with someone else's service.
Yeah, and if you look at the hyper-converged market, they did different things. So Nutanix have got their distributed file system, which is Google FS sort of based, you know, and they're building out a whole lot of analytics that sit on top of that. Simplicity are doing something very similar, but they've got the whole dedupe thing that sits in there with that dedicated bit of hardware. So they've all got
Evo Rail, vSAN. I mean,
vSAN,
all the
yeah,
hyper-converged
absolutely.
Players have a distributed platform underneath it. Pure doesn't have a distributed platform. It's a dual controller system.
So unless Pure do something where they talk to Cisco like everybody else has done and actually end up with a reference architecture.
Yeah.
And Cisco seems to be much more open to this. And the reference architectures are flying out. You can have it with this, you can have it with that array. The bit which Cisco don't have, which is storage, they'll happily stick anything behind as long as it
And where's the value or the differentiation for Pure there? Because, like you say, everybody seems to be cropping up with reference architectures for UCS these days. They'd just be the same as anybody else then.
You can even buy them now with a SimpliVity card in it.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they're actually going to release, because
it's all pure speculation right now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Vaughn, call us.
Yeah. Do you think though that it's a potential that they've looked at the market and said, you know what? Pure speculation again, but have we potentially peaked? People know us now. The kind of growth we're seeing is maybe tailing off, and we need to take all that VC funding, and they've had a lot of it, and start funneling it elsewhere.
I wonder whether they always had a plan and always realised that one array would not be enough to build a business.
You'd hope so, because otherwise they are playing a lot of catch-up then.
Yeah, so I would hope that that's always been their plan, was we've got to get in the market with something, we started off with this, we'll build a business outside of that afterwards. And obviously they went after and got loads of money to be able to do that from the market. I would always hope that they had a plan to, you know, expand into other areas. I would think they must have done.
Yeah, I used to wonder whether they would try and put Flash closer to the server as well, but it doesn't seem, you know, that's not what this particular rumor seems to be about.
And that's not their style either, is it? I mean, they, you know, they're just using ordinary SSDs in an array.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything clever with Flash or, you know, building any other type.
You know, we've been asking questions earlier, like which technologies or technology companies were really good but had a crappy marketing message and didn't make it. Kind of similar question. Of the startups that we've seen that have been successful over the years, which ones can we think of that have branched away from their core focus when they started up and were successful? You know, let's say you started out as an all-flash array and you went to add a PCI card, or like Fusion started out with a PCI card and then suddenly they were building all-flash arrays and it was kind of...
Oh, and their software. The software that Pure built later on, that was a good move, only the company did not... No, the Fusion.
Yeah.
The Flash software that they build later on with the APIs and so, that was a good move. Sorry they didn't execute on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I don't really have a good example of companies that made it out of their initial focus.
I mean, even if you look at NetApp, I know it's 20-odd years later, but they're still struggling to decouple themselves from one product on tap, right?
Yeah, I don't think that LSI stuff is doing them that well.
Well, it's not. I mean...
It's not their core message, right?
It's not my core message, and... So I bought LSI. LSI makes fine JBOD arrays. You want something going straight line, go fairly fast. It's a great product, but it's not NetApp's core market. And yet again, it's a place where vendors bought something and moved into market which they don't understand.
I've got to give props to EMC again. Like when you come back to the VCE thing with VBlock, it wasn't their core message exactly like you say. So what did they do? They spun out effectively a different organization and said, you guys go and do this. You get your own salespeople that will learn and will make a market. You get your own management people that will, again, drive that market. They did a great job of that. I can't see, it's not just Pure, I can't see Pure doing that. NetApp haven't done it.
So VCE could have gone two ways, couldn't it? It could have been successful like it was, or it could have been a complete failure.
Yeah.
It could have gone either way. And what did it cost them to do that? A few hundred million? So, in actual fact, when you look at it, it's probably quite a clever move.
Yes.
To give it a go, that wasn't part of the core business, that was a partnership with other people, and all they had to do was throw a bit of money into it, which in reality was not a massive amount.
And if it failed, it wasn't going to have a massive impact on their brand.
Absolutely.
Whereas if Pure do, or anybody goes down the converged route, and they fail, the impact on their brand will be huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And they can't call themselves Pure Storage anymore, because there'll be Pure Storage and other stuff.
Yeah, they're less pure as well. Yeah,
they'll be impure. But your branding is
drop the storage and stick in at the
pure storage and service.
Yeah, doesn't roll at the top.
It's quite the same thing, is it?
Okay, guys. Well, I really appreciate your time today. Let's just do a quick round the table. Hans, how can we catch you on Twitter and places like that?
If you can't spell my name, just go to @theITHulk. That'll help.
You need to get @HDL. Bet that's already gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It is. Better name.
Oh, thank you for that, Mr. Chris M. Evans.
Yeah.
So that's like a delivery company, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Martin?
You can catch me on Twitter as StorageBod, or www.storagebod.com will take you to my blog, or you can catch me on the register.
Go on, what's the deal you have with the register then? Are you the budding Chris Meller?
He's his understood, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, I'm the Chris Meller who actually knows what he's writing about.
Very good. It's good to say that when he's not here.
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, you can get me at Chris M. Evans on Twitter, and architecting.it is a blog website.
And instead of a secret Windows Phone app review this week, we're going to fade out with a Geeks movie review. So, reviewing a film from the perspective of a geek. Now, this is new, right? And it's not as good as a secret Windows Phone app. But we'll work on it, and it will become a regular slot on the show. Not replacing the secret Windows Phone app reviews. Sometimes we'll have a movie review, and sometimes we'll have a secret Windows Phone app review. So, here goes. Computer, show me a good movie.
Specify parameters.
Oh, I don't know. Let's say 20th and 21st century. Category, films that computer geeks would like.
Enter authorization code.
Oh, right. Authorization code Poulton Alpha 386.
Security authorization accepted.
Accessing library computer data.
Okay, let's have a look here. Computer? Load film Tron Legacy into Holodeck 3.
Holodeck 3 program is ready.
So, a geek's review of Tron Legacy. Walt Disney, 2010, directed by Joseph Kosinski and starring Jeff Bridges, Garrett Hedlund and Olivia Wilde. Now, from a geek's perspective, the film is packed with technology. I mean, it's about a computer company and the super smart founder of that company working out how to become part of the computer. How to kind of transform or transport his consciousness into the computer and run as a process within the operating system. And I know that Gabriel thinks operating systems are already last year and not important, but I think it works. Now, at the start of the film, we get to see a bunch of action on Unix shell terminals. You know, Unix commands being punched into terminals. That's always cool for a geek. I caught a command being piped through grep, and I caught a kill minus 9. So that was pretty cool. In a geek sort of way, of course. Then there's the whole notion of living within a computer system. And I thought it had a ton of potential, but for me, ultimately, it failed to deliver on that potential. Now that's not saying it's a bad movie, it just doesn't go deep enough for me. No doubt to make it more appealing to a wider audience, I mean there aren't that many computer geeks out there to justify a high budget film that talks geek all the way through and abides by real life theory of modern operating systems. Now, in summary, the special effects were okay. The acting, I thought, was pretty good. Jeff Bridges played this kind of wise old bearded Yoda type uber guru character, and I thought that was cool. But it was all just a bit lightweight and a bit superficial for me. So, a good film, and I enjoyed watching it, but I came away still wanting. Ultimately, it didn't satisfy my geek.
Deck 1 life support has been terminated.
What the hell?